Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh yes, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for September 5th, 2012. September. Can you believe it? Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program today. I really do appreciate it. I have a very timely podcast today on The Healthy Mind. Since it is September and we're getting into the fall months, I wanted to take the time today at the beginning of the podcast to talk a little bit about seasonal affective disorder, or SAD. Now, a lot of you have heard about SAD, but I want to talk about it a little bit more in detail. I want to talk a little bit about the causes, where it comes from, some of the risks that are there, and what are some of the treatments that might be available for seasonal affective disorder. So if you have noticed that you might get the winter blues when it gets to this time of the year, stick around and take a listen to the show. We've got a lot of health news to go through as well, some fascinating studies that have been done just over the past week. And this one, wow, we've talked about inflammation and depression before, but would you believe a fairly common drug, anti-inflammatory drug, that's used for Crohn's disease may actually help with depression? Anti-inflammatory meds and depression. We'll talk about that in the second half of the podcast with the other news. We'll do some headlines. And hey, we got ourselves a pretty jam-packed podcast, so I'm really, really glad that you are here today. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. And as you have done, some beautiful, beautiful emails from really all over the world. Thank you so much. The email address for any comments or questions, peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay, well, it is getting to that time of the year. And this is really here in September, particularly as we move along into September and certainly October, I start talking to folks about seasonal affective disorder, because I think you've noticed it, 8 o'clock, it's really starting to get dark again outside. And really here in September, and as we get into October, we really begin to pay attention and are acutely aware of the decreased amount of light in the day. And for some individuals, this time of the year can put them at risk for a worsening in their depression or anxiety, what's known as seasonal affective disorder, or SAD for short. So what exactly is SAD, or seasonal affective disorder? Well, it's a depression that occurs, but really that occurs for an individual at the same time, at the same season during the year. Folks who have seasonal affective disorder may feel more depressed into the late fall and winter, but then they tend to feel fairly well during the summer months. Now, as we talk about this, anyone really can get seasonal affective disorder, but we see that it tends to be more common in people who live in areas where winter days are short. It's more common in women, and we see it typically between the ages of 15 and 55. Now, if you've got a family history of it, just like most emotional disorders, there might be a higher likelihood that you could have seasonal affective disorder. But it's this pattern that we see according to season. Fall, winter is worse, spring, summer is better. Now, why does this happen? What are the causes of SAD? And really, there's a lot of theories here in terms of why exactly this happens, but it does appear to be directly linked to sunlight. At least this is what most experts feel. But what I find one of the most interesting explanations, and I think it makes a lot of sense, is where the evolutionary psychologists come into the picture. But the theories there suggest that as we needed to hibernate, whether it was human beings or even before human beings, we tended to use less calories. We would slow down, our body would just slow down for the winter and hibernate, kind of like how bears do, right? So it makes sense that we might have a slowing down in general of our overall metabolism to a slight degree. Now, we're not hibernating for the winter, but I think a lot of us can relate to the fact that with less light, we don't feel like doing as many things. We might go to bed earlier. We might feel more tired. We might feel like eating certain types of food. In fact, with seasonal affective disorder, it's pretty hallmark that carbohydrates like breads and pasta are really something that the individual wants. But I think we can all relate to it. We tend to slow down in the winter. Well, for some people, particularly if there is an underlying mood disorder or a tendency to have mood problems, this combination of the winter and maybe some of those slight physiologic changes that kind of owe back to our evolutionary history with hibernation might be just enough for the person to where they begin to feel mood symptoms, depression, and sadness, particularly in the fall and winter. Now, these are all theories, and they're very interesting to speculate about, and I discuss the examples when I'm trying to explain to an individual why I think they may be struggling with seasonal affective disorder. But the most important thing to realize with seasonal affective disorder is it's treatable. It really is. It's treatable. And it doesn't have to be medications. In fact, the treatment that is the most indicated for those individuals with seasonal affective disorder is light therapy, phototherapy. And if any of you have struggled with that or have heard about a friend or a family member who has struggled with seasonal depression, you know that they use the lights. The SAD lights, the phototherapy lights. But what exactly are these lights and how are they used? Well, a lot of research has been done into finding, number one, the best type of light, and number two, the best intensity and the best way to be exposed to it. And it really has been refined down to a science. And really, the prevailing standard right now is that you need full spectrum light, just like sunlight. And the intensity, now the intensity of light is measured in lux, L-U-X. And really you need a minimum of 10,000 lux in a SAD light box or a SAD lamp. Full spectrum light, 10,000 lux. That is the standard right now. I really have to advise you before I go any further here, I'm not giving medical advice here. If you think that you're struggling with seasonal affective disorder, please be prudent. Talk to your doctor about it. The lights, you have to be careful. They're not without their own risks. And really, you should be talking to a physician or a medical professional before you go out and buy any kind of light box. But typically, the treatment involves utilizing the light box for about 20 to 30 minutes a day. And if you have the ability to leave it maybe on in a room, an office, or a kitchen, or something like that while you're up and about during the day, that's fine too. But it's the full spectrum light trying to mimic the sunlight with an intensity that has been shown and studied to be effective. It really does work. So if you're struggling, especially beginning this time of the year and moving into the winter blues where there's sadness and a lot of fatigue, take the time to investigate it and talk to your medical health professional and see if a SAD light may be helpful for you. Again, talk to your medical professional. But with seasonal affective disorder, the most effective way that has been found, at least in the research, to treat it is not with meds, but with light. Light mimicking the sun to help the winter blues. And that, my friends, can be a huge first step to take as you walk down your road to the Healthy Mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, wow. What an amazing week for health news. This first story was just incredible. The headline, how an anti-inflammatory drug offers new hope for depression. A drug used to treat Crohn's disease, an anti-inflammatory drug, relieves the symptoms of depression. And we've talked about the link between inflammation and depression and what appears to be a growing link, that depression affects inflammation and that inflammation may be one of the causes of depression. Well, this link between the two just got a little stronger. In the latest study, it was out of Emory University, scientists there found that a medication with anti-inflammatory properties that's been used for Crohn's disease may offer new hope for people with difficult-to-treat depression. And it's this difficult-to-treat depression or treatment-resistant depression that continues to be the bane in psychiatry. How do you get people better when they've tried a lot of things and they can't seem to get response? Well, inflammation may be part of the issue. According to the senior author of this study, Dr. Andrew Miller from Emory University, quote, inflammation is the body's natural response to infection or wounding. However, when prolonged or excessive, inflammation can damage many parts of the body, including the brain. End of quotes. We've talked about various studies in the past that have shown that link between depression and inflammation, particularly as it relates to heart disease. And if you go to this particular article, How an Anti-Inflammatory Drug Offers New Hope, I've linked to a bunch of articles and studies that show this link between inflammation and depression. What the scientists wanted to do at Emory was to see whether anti-inflammatory medications would be a useful treatment for either a wide range of people with difficult-to-treat depression or those that were difficult to treat but also had high levels of inflammation. So what did they do? Well, they used a drug called Remicade. And Remicade is used, it's a biological drug, meaning that it copies the effects of substances that are naturally made in our immune system. In the case of Remicade, it copies one of the anti-inflammatory molecules in our body. Well, in the study, they randomized individuals, and you either got Remicade or you got the placebo. And they wanted to see what differences, if any, emerged. Now, when they looked at the whole group, there weren't differences that were found in improvement for depression symptoms between those that got Remicade and those that got placebo. But when the people in the study who had high inflammation and difficult to treat depression were examined separately, they showed a significantly better response to Remicade. It was something about the combination between a high inflammatory state and having depression. Had to have those too, but the anti-inflammatory drug improved mood symptoms. And according to another author in the study, Dr. Charles Raison, quote, this is the first successful application of a biological therapy to depression. This study opens the door to a host of new approaches that targets the immune system to treat psychiatric diseases. Incredible. We're finding more and more of a link between inflammation and our emotional states. An anti-inflammatory drug already being used in Crohn's disease, found to be helpful in those with difficult to treat depression. Okay, now, speaking of mind-body, let me ask you this. Are you still putting off doing that mindfulness meditation that you've always wanted to do? Or maybe registering for that yoga class you just think would be wonderful for you to do? How about, do you have type A personality? If you do, and you haven't done these things, well, you may not want to wait any longer. The headline, chronic stress is linked to a high risk of stroke. This study found that the stressors in our lives, major life stressors, combined with type A personality traits, increased an individual's stroke risk significantly. And it was independent of certain types of factors, such as your gender or an unhealthy lifestyle. Chronic stress. Now, what exactly is chronic stress? How did they define that? And chronic stress is defined as physical or mental symptoms in response to stressors that are lasting longer than 6 months. Now, chronic stress, by that definition, has clearly been linked to a heightened risk of heart disease. But up until this study, they weren't sure how this related to stroke. Pretty decent study, too. 150 adults who had at least had a stroke and been admitted to the hospital, and those, about 300 others, who were randomly selected. They were healthy. Now, what were the type A behaviors? And we've heard about them all. Anger, irritability, hostility, aggression, impatience, all of that. They also looked at whether or not you had risk factors for stroke, like diabetes and high blood pressure, and also some of your lifestyle choices. Well, the results were clear, and they were stunning. Compared with a healthy comparison group, the risk of a stroke was almost 4 times higher among those who had experienced a major life event in the previous year. 4 times higher if you've had a major life event. And what about those type A personality traits? Well, being a type A personality more than doubled your stroke risk. Also, they found, obviously, a history of smoking, if you had too much caffeine, if you had underlying medical problems, this also increased your risk for stroke. But when all of the factors were assessed together, a very clear pattern emerged. The risk of a stroke was highly associated with both chronic stress and type A personality traits. And this was the case irrespective of other risk factors. You simply cannot separate mind and body. It is mind-body. And these two news stories are just a small example of this relationship. Do what you can to manage and effectively reduce that stress in your life. And this isn't just so you can feel better emotionally, which is huge anyway, but it has profound implications on your level of physical health as well. The mind-body connection. Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Living against the clock. Does the loss of daily rhythms cause obesity? Now, electric lighting has been wonderful. It allows us to work, rest, and play at all hours of the day. And a recent study published this week in the Journal of Bioessays looks at the implications of this. And it finds that some of the consequences of having light available in electric lighting all the time disturbs our daily rhythms. And that may have serious consequences for our health and also for our waistlines. The next headline. Researchers identify a potential treatment for the cognitive effects of stress-related disorders. And this was out of Columbia University Medical Center. But the researchers there have identified a potential treatment for the cognitive effects of stress-related disorders, including PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a new class of molecules, small molecules called RICALs. And what they found were that these particular molecules prevented the learning and memory deficits that were associated with stress-related disorders. And finally, you know, I wanted to include this because it's hopeful and it's positive, and it really surprised me. The headline, information overload? Information overload may be an exaggerated way to describe today's always-on media environment. I've talked about this here quite a few times on The Healthy Mind. But according to a new Northwestern University study, very few Americans seem to feel bogged down or overwhelmed by the volume of news and information at their fingertips and on their screens. So it turns out we're doing a pretty good job. Even though it feels like it's coming at us from all directions, we do a good job in setting those limits and boundaries so we don't feel overwhelmed. Not bad at all. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can follow me on Twitter as well. Please don't hesitate. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, criticisms, let me know. I want to hear from you. You can email me with any question at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.